I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. I'm Gab and Jules Show. Blue skies over Madrid. Yeah. Dark skies, as evident in the way you're dressed for Jules. Personally, we're going to get into that huge Paris Saint-Germain Real Madrid game at the top of the show. Also, massive news just down the road here, a couple miles away. Stamford Bridge. Roman Abramovich's assets have been frozen. We'll talk about the implications. We've got Liverpool. We've got a ton going on here, Jules. There is one place to start.
Do we have to?
I'm sorry. We have to do this. I'm going to quickly sum up what I saw before. Paris Saint-Germain, first leg, batter Real Madrid, win 1-0. Lionel Messi misses a penalty. Mm. Second leg, everything's going fine.
Under control.
Under control. Till the hour mark. A few minutes before that, Ancelotti, who... I don't think Real Madrid have been playing badly. They tried to press early. They tried to do what they could. Toni Kroos, I don't think, was fully fit. No. Takes him off, sends on Camavinga, a bit of wheels with Rodrigo. You know, they were criticized. Oh, but you're vulnerable to the counter. Even Joel Embiid, the presumptive MVP of the NBA, of the Sixers, of course, now that Ben Simmons is gone. even he says, why is Carvajal playing so high? Well, they had to get back into the tie, and they had success pressing.
They were not good, though. They were not good for an hour.
But I don't think they were bad. No, I think Paris Saint-Germain handled them, right? Because there's another team that you're playing against that who also try to win.
Yeah.
And then Donnarumma makes that mistake. I don't think it's entirely on him.
No.
And then the wheels completely come off.
Yeah. We've been here before in Barcelona almost to the day 5 years ago. We went there at the Parc des Princes in United. Chelsea did it too. I think the mindset in this football club is wrong. There's something wrong psychologically in the way they approach games, in the lack of reaction to it. And I think they're all to blame. Poch, the players, Donnarumma for the mistake. Is it a foul? Is it not a foul? You know what? Even before Leonardo or Nasser Al-Khelaifi or Pochettino opened their mouth, I knew exactly that the excuse would be, oh, but look, it's a foul. The first goal changes everything. I'm not even sure it's a foul. And I'm a hardcore PSG fan.
Right. And I think whether it was a foul or not, and I don't think those fouls get called often in European football.
Yeah.
Or even in, people said, oh, it would be a foul in France or Italy or Spain. Frank Leboeuf was saying last night, I'm not even sure that's necessarily the case anymore. No.
And you should not have ever been in that position anyway. Kick the ball on the motorway that goes to, I don't know where.
You could make the point about Marquinhos as well. There was seemed to be an intent on playing out and so on, which got them into trouble.
Yeah.
I want to get your view on Lionel Messi, because I actually thought for the first hour or so, he was very effective. He helped relieve the pressure. He would drop into midfield and be like, guys, give me the ball. You know, whatever else I can do, I can still hang on to it. I can relieve the pressure. I can help out. And then that seemed to go away later. Is it on him, or is it on people not getting him the ball?
No, I just think he's not a leader. He's not the leader at 1-1 or even when you 2-1 down to just grab everyone and say, come on, let's get focused again. Let's switch on again. Instead, I was watching him the whole time. He was quiet. He was head down. This is it. And I think, he got less of the ball. There's that free kick at the end just over the bar. But I think what prevented him from having a bigger impact in the last half hour is to take Paredes off, because for me, which was a completely stupid idea from Pochettino, because Neymar, Messi, Paredes and Verratti were creating this square in midfield that completely bypassed the Real Madrid midfield three. They could not get near them. And those four kept passing the ball to each other, keeping possession, keeping the control of the game. As soon as you took Paredes out of there at 1-1 and Gay came on, this was it. Gay is a completely different player, doesn't have the same skill set at all to Paredes. Paredes was on a yellow, maybe he was not fully fit. Keep him on. Neymar should have been the one coming off.
We have to talk about Real Madrid. We haven't even mentioned the fact Karim Benzema's performance.
Karim the Dream!
See, I didn't know if I was going to have to do that, you'd be in the mood to do that.
He's my bro. He broke my heart, but he's still my brother.
So, I thought that was phenomenal. We talk about, you know, big clubs with a culture of winning and so on and leadership. I felt as poorly as they played in the first leg, as difficult as things were them for the hour mark, I really thought that they looked like a team that said, we're still in this. We can score 3 goals in 5 minutes if we need to.
It was you could not feel it in the stadium. The crowd woke up after that first goal. Literally, it went from only the 1,800 PSG fans who were on my right, you could hear them singing, and that was it. The rest of the stadium were asleep, hibernation. And then Karim scored the first goal, and after that, it was like an literally, it was wow, like just like this. And after that, you could not. And to be fair to Karim, the whole game, he was like, come on, let's go, let's press, trying. But on his own, there was not much he could do. After that first goal, everything changed. Suddenly they were on the front foot. They were playing with much more intensity. You know, the second goal comes after Modric literally running the whole. I don't understand how someone just clipped the back of his heel, make a foul on the halfway line, gets a yellow.
Wasn't that Neymar's job?
Verratti is there, Kimpembe is there, Nuno Mendes is there. It's not just Neymar, but Neymar losing the ball the way he did, he should have made
that
foul.
Did you see Neymar run after him?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
That's pathetic.
That was really, I think he really let himself down there.
But Karim Hattrick, 34 years old, come on.
There's genius. A lot of people think you can sing a lot for praise at Real Madrid. I feel, obviously, we haven't praised Carlo Ancelotti enough. Jules, we haven't even mentioned yet the biggest story going into this, which is Kylian Mbappe and his future. And as we showed, his performance in the game. Obviously, in case you've been sleeping under a rock, he becomes a free agent on June 1st. From now, he can, or June 30th, actually.
Yeah.
He can sign with any other club. He could have signed for Real Madrid already. There were suggestions that it would have been announced if Paris Saint-Germain had been playing Real Madrid. You know, if you're a Real Madrid fan, this is the best possible thing because Mbappe goes and is phenomenal and you get through.
What was funny is that he almost felt last night in the stadium that he wanted to impress the fans and they wanted to impress him. Almost like they were saying, it was like I wrote in my ESPN piece, it was his big audition, really. This was the first time he was playing there. The whole Mbappe family was there in the director's box with the rest of the PSG hierarchy. It was not just them, you know, invited by Florentino Perez. And it felt like this. It felt like a big audition. When the PSG players came on the pitch for warm-up, I was pitch side, and Kylian almost created a stampede in the sense that all those like dozens and dozens of Real Madrid fans like literally rushed down to be as close as possible to see him, and he kept shouting his name, and it was unreal, really surreal. And then he pushed his performance out where he could have had a hat trick for two, you know, quite close and but right offside course, but still quite close. One on Nuno Mendes and the other one himself with an incredible dummy that sat down the whole stadium. Not just Courtois, but incredible. And I just think if there was still a little doubt in his mind about do I stay in Paris or do I come to Madrid, I think Wednesday
let's talk about the dummy. Because I'm just technically, because I'm a big Courtois fan, as you know. And I also have learned I did not play professional football. And when I played in school, I was not a goalkeeper. Well, one thing I've learned is that most people who are not keepers, outfield players, even people who played at a high level for a long time, a lot of them have no clue about goalkeeping.
Yeah.
Like, really, and I say this, and it's not me saying it, position. It's every single ex-pro goalkeeper I've talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
There are people who criticize Courtois because supposedly you can't ever concede a goal on your near post. Frankly, though, when he opens his body up like that, logic suggests he's going to go the other way. And what do you want Courtois to do?
But Courtois...
He certainly froze the defender that way as well.
Yeah, but Courtois is not as good on his right-hand side to come low than he is on his left-hand side. And I think Kylian knew it. That's why the first goal disallowed is on that right side of Courtois. And I think he was just, that's where Mbappe targeted him. You know, I think that was the idea very much.
But
just to finish on the dummy goal, this is Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo. Like this is the spitting image of what Ronaldo would have done. It's a little bit the goal against Lazio in the UEFA Cup final. You know, the gesture, the body, the way he moves his feet so quickly. And, you know, Ronaldo is one of his idol as well. I mean, he's a little bit, you know, too young. Cristiano is more, it was more the Cristiano era, but still, you know, he watched a lot of videos of Brazilian Ronaldo. And I think this goal for me was just like, wow. My first reaction was, this is Ronaldo all over. This is him impersonating Ronaldo the Brazilian. And it's a real shame that that goal was disallowed. But again, it was the right call. But it's just, the more I watch him, and the more I'm amazed by his talent, his maturity. And yeah, he disappeared a little bit in the last half hour, you know, and he was part of the collapse. But what an incredible talent he is. And I think everybody at the Bernabeu on Wednesday night and around the world saw again, and even if the big, you know, even now it's all about Benzema, and he's right. And I said, when we thought there was a new prince ready to be crowned, the old king said, hey, don't forget about me, I'm still the boss here. And he would be the boss for a few more months, but Kylian would then take over.
I tweeted that. And I tweeted something like, Kylian, young buck, hold my beer.
Exactly.
You know, like, this is my house. Exactly. I am Karim Benzema.
For now.
You're not here yet.
Exactly.
How soon do you think, I mean, realistically, obviously the best scenario for Paris Saint-Germain is if he decides to stick around.
But why would he?
That's a fair point, and we'll get into Paris Saint-Germain's future. But I'm just wondering, is there any reason for him now to delay a decision?
No. But the decision was always, let's wait for the Real Madrid tie. Let's see where we are by then. Because I do think, like we've said before, I do think that this was always going to have an impact. You go to the Bernabeu, you boss the game, you individually, but the team as a collective, you play really well, like the first leg. It's a statement, and PSG come to you and say, look, why would you go there? Stay with us for another season. Look what we've got going here. Right. This is good. This is, you see.
But I'm saying, now, you don't have a Champions League to worry about.
That's it.
The league is wrapped up. Exactly. There's no reason why he should not be making a decision next week or two.
Yeah. Maybe
the or announcing it.
But yeah. I think it could be quick now.
And I'm assuming it would be good for the club for him to come out and commit one way or another.
Yeah. Because then, if you know by the end of March that he's going, then that leaves you a lot of time to prepare for who comes next, who you're trying to get to replace him, because good luck to do that.
If you look at it from that perspective, about where he's going to fit next year at Real Madrid, if we assume that he's going to sign, you know, you're looking at a front line of Vinicius, Mbappe, and Benzema.
Yeah.
That's pretty tasty.
That is scary.
And I'm assuming Vinicius is going to switch flanks, or
Kylian. Yeah, I think you can have such a fluid. I don't know if Carlo will still be there. I don't know. I don't know if
after he wins his fourth Champions League,
if he does, then I think he would be there. But let's say he doesn't, and it's only La Liga. I don't know if Florentino would do. I don't know if there's anyone who could come anyway. But let's say Carlo stays. I think if you can work out almost some sort of fluid front three, where, Kylian starts on the right and Vinny on the left and Benzema in the center. But then you've got a lot of freedom in your movement. You can switch positions. You can come, and it could almost be Vinny as a 10 and then the other two as the two strikers. I don't know. You can come up with so many different options that it is scary. And it will need a bit of adaptation, I think, and, you know, getting to know each other and things. But imagine that Benzema and Mbappe would have played a whole year together for France, on top of the mutual respect that they and the friendship they already have. I can just see Mbappe coming in and fitting in so well, so quickly in that team. And we're not even talking about the other players who are going to come and even strengthen more this team, because this is, you know, this is not just Mbappe coming in and this team is going to be amazing again. I think there's a lot of other areas where they need improvement, where they need to work on. But if they do that, I think it'd be scary.
The narrative is Paris Saint-Germain throwing it away. I said I'd fly the flag for Carlo. I just want to remind people that before the game, not only were they sitting on that awful performance in the first leg, he was also without Ferland Mendy and Casemiro.
Yeah.
Casemiro especially, people thought, he's so important, blah, blah, blah. He obviously is important because he obviously was missed for an hour or so.
Yeah.
But they found a way. He found a way around that. And you're always big on changes.
Yeah.
I thought bringing in Camavinga and Rodrigo in those circumstances, I think certainly helped. I don't want to say turn the game, because obviously that wasn't necessarily the turning point. But once it got to 1-1,
they were
instrumental in driving you in a way that Kroos was perhaps no longer able to.
Yeah, completely. I expected him to make those changes at halftime, I have to say. I expected something to change at halftime. He kept them another 15 minutes. With the Kroos one, he said on Tuesday, if Kroos is 95% fit, I won't play him. He was not even 95% fit.
No, if you look closely, Carlo's nose gets a little longer when he says that.
But that could have cost him. And good for him that he made the decision at the right time maybe to sub him off, and that worked out. But like with Benzema in the first leg, that could have cost him. However, again, I saw a proactive coach in Carlo and I saw a very reactive, late reaction coach in Pochettino. And I'm sorry, it's not good enough. At 1-1, but remember, if you remember, and Spurs fans will remember, when Juve came to Wembley and won against Spurs, Poch was exactly the same in the sense that they were in control of the game. They had been good in the first leg. They were in control of that second leg. And yet the first goal went in and then he froze. And Wednesday night, he froze again. He froze. He didn't know what to do. What's my move now? What can I do? What do I do? And he did nothing. And I'm sorry, Gab, this is not good enough. And the thing he did were wrong. This is a team. Yes, it's an unbalanced squad. I give you that. It lacks leader. I give you that. But the last thing you need is a coach that has no idea what to do. This is a team that hasn't won away from home, Gab, against the top seven in Ligue 1. And they haven't won a single game away from home in the Champions League this season. How is that possible? You go to Bruges, you don't win. You go to Leipzig, you don't win. You go to City, you don't win. You go to Madrid, you don't win. But you go to Nantes, you don't win. You go to Nice, you don't win. You go to Marseille, you don't win. I mean, come on.
I'll submit a theory. And you can tell me because you watch more Ligue 1 than I do. But I've watched, I think, every Paris Saint-Germain game domestically this season. I'm sure there have been 90-minute performances. But there have been very, very few.
Yeah.
And often, and very rarely, when all three were there. It feels like so many times, and obviously they have a massive lead domestically, right? So many times, you know, they either go a goal down and then the three work together or they score late or whatever. And obviously Messi got going late in the season and then Neymar had his injury. I think sometimes, you know, people have made the point that, well, you know, when you've got three superstars, you have to accommodate them. But there's times when they all need to work and work together.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain haven't been asked to do that very often this season. And they failed to do that many times this season.
Yeah.
And I think if it's not there in your DNA, you don't have to turn it on every single game. You don't have to be Manchester City where they all run around ants and run themselves on the ground. But you have to be able to do it occasionally. Yeah. And that, I think, is something that Pochettino has not been able to instill. Yeah. And I might suggest that part of it has to do with the fact that what made Pochettino a great manager. Look, I'm a massive Pochettino fan.
Yeah, no, me too.
Not just because there's a small resemblance between him and Ancelotti. It's not just that, in fact, you could see future Pochettino looking a little bit like current Ancelotti. But no, it's just the fact that I think what he did at Spurs was tremendous. Whatever failures eventually happened in those circumstances, you know, let's think about who came after him at Spurs and how they did.
Often
with more money. And I'm not just talking about Mourinho, I'm talking about Conte as well. And Nuno. But what made him great at Southampton and at Tottenham was a certain way of playing that was predicated upon blue-collar work ethic, on quick movements, on pressing. Heung-min Son and Harry Kane, maybe superstars, although probably not of the magnitude of Neymar, Messi, and Mbappe, but they put on their hard hat and they said, we're going to be warriors in the trenches. We're going to work like this. When he arrived at Paris Saint-Germain, he realized, perhaps correctly, that he couldn't ask them to work that way. And so he was asked to do a job that was completely different to him. This is completely alien. Carlo Ancelotti has shown that he is the Galactico whisper. He can have the Galacticos. He can keep them happy. He can get them to work when they need to work. Pep Guardiola as well, certainly at Barcelona. People said, ooh. I mean, last night I think somebody said but Messi and Neymar are superstars. You know, you can't get them to work. Well, Pep Guardiola I don't know if Pep was Luis Enrique. Right. At Barcelona, they were working together.
Yeah.
If Pep had been there, I'm pretty sure they would have
completely.
But you have to have, that is a skill as a manager, to be able to integrate the superstar into the rest of the team and be able to have a certain way.
Yeah.
He hasn't had to do
that. He doesn't have that skill. But maybe because he never worked with superstars before. And maybe because...
Or superstars with that mindset. Harry Kane to me is a superstar. Right? But he has a different mindset.
But he wasn't a superstar when Poch arrived.
But he became one.
Yeah,
he became one.
So maybe it's easier. But, and maybe this is the dressing room that is difficult. I think it is difficult. It's a club that is not easy to manage. Yeah, I give him that. And he's not the only one to blame. But he's been there a year and a month and something. And it's not good enough. I'm sorry, it's not good enough. It might not just be his fault.
Right.
But Gab, it's just not good enough what we saw on the pitch, what we see off the pitch.
Okay, you're a Paris Saint-Germain fan. I don't think I'm outing you here.
No.
How much blame do you place on Leo and Nasser? Because it was Leonardo who put this team together.
Yeah.
And it was Nasser who sanctioned this approach.
Yeah. You know, and I think they have to be blamed. I don't even think they should last the season.
Leo and Nasser?
Yeah. I don't think...
What's Nasser going to do? I mean, he...
No, but like the ownership can replace a...
Nasser?
A chairman, yeah, a president. Of course they can. Of course they can. Why not?
Wow, I thought it hadn't crossed my mind.
No, but... And I mean,
it's funny for Nasser to say, let me be less involved. Because he was very angry after the game. There were all sorts of unconfirmed reports in the Spanish press. So I don't, for legal reasons, I don't want to go into it.
So PSG told me that he wanted to have a chat with the referees.
Right, after the game, which is never a good sign.
It's never a good idea.
It's especially, I think, puts him in a bad position because he's a member. And look, I'm not picking on him. I mean, Andrea Agnelli did the same thing back after the, when they were knocked out against Real Madrid, was it? When they had the last minute penalty and Buffon got sent off
I guess
you're a member of UEFA's executive committee. You're the president of the European Club Association.
Yeah, yeah.
You have this institutional role. You cannot ask to go and speak to the referee after. What are you going to tell him?
I know.
Send somebody else to do it.
The game is over. Yeah.
Send Leo to do it. Like,
yeah, but Leo. I think.
Where was Leo?
He was there. I saw him before the game. He was all like this with his thumbs up, you know, as he always does. He was smiling. He was not smiling at the end. But this is also his failure. He cannot sell to this. This squad, as we said before, it's an unbalanced squad. It's a dysfunctional squad. I think it's a dysfunctional club in many respects too, as much as I love them. And I think Nasser is partly to blame. There's too many influences, two different streams that go against each other. There are too many people involved. And I just don't think... That's why, as well, those problems keep coming up because some things don't change when they should change. And for me, Nasser should change. Leonardo should change. The manager will change because Pochettino is not going to be there next season. But then, in the squad, what do you do with the squad? What do you do with a squad? You've got Neymar until 2026, potentially. 2025, the contract, with an extra year in option that he can trigger by himself, pretty much. He's 30. Do I want 4 years more of Neymar the way he played yesterday? How on earth did he play 90 minutes? It's crazy. He lost everything that made him good. And yeah, he may be not completely fully match fit because he came back from an injury. But still, this is crazy. What do you do with Messi? I mean, Messi has been great, but... You know, how much better can he be, or will he? Is that his level?
What do you do if financial fair play comes back with actual real enforcement? And I know people are going to say it'll never happen as long as Nasser's around, but you don't know.
And you're going to lose Kylian. So what do you go?
Who would you go next?
Yeah, but who do you replace it with?
Well, you
go for, you go all in for Haaland. You go for Lewandowski.
You have Icardi.
Come on.
All right. Okay. I suppose somebody tweeted, "Oh, good news! Best possible result for Manchester United." I'm just wondering
why,
because now Pochettino's going to go, so now he's available,
of course,
and whatever. There's obviously a big PR campaign for Poch, and he has Premier League experience and whatever at United. But I think this kind of tarnishes him and his reaction after the game. And United don't have a great PR with their fans right now because of some of the decisions they made. I don't know. I mean, again, I go back to this. They're not going to do this, but I would like to see some accountability from somebody upstairs and say, this is the club we want to be. This is where we're going. Hi, I'm John. Or hi, I'm Darren. I am the technical director, head of recruitment, whatever. I'm going to lead the next manager search. This is what I want. This is what I'm looking for. And then we have a conversation about whether Rangnick should stick around, whether it should be Pochettino or Ten Hag or whoever, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just want to get that.
That's not going to happen. So, yeah, well, would you take Pochettino?
At United?
Yeah.
It depends what I'm trying to do.
But
listen,
they,
but by the way,
go for him.
What?
If they go for him, it can only be for a minimum of, well, 4-year project where you said to him, listen, we've got full faith in you. You're not gonna be sacked in 6 months time or a year time if we finish sixth or something. Go and rebuild the squad. Go and make this team better. Go and improve our players. PSG, I think he knew that it was never going to be a long-term project. And I think this is what he needs. He needs a long-term, a big club. At Southampton, he knew that he was not going to be there long, that it was a platform for him to go higher up. But I think the idea that he has going to United is this: okay, I'm going to have the time to build the team like I want, with the players that I want, to play the football I want, which he could not do in Paris. I give him that. But there's also a lot of similarities between PSG and Manchester United as football clubs in how dysfunctional they are, how hard I think the dressing room is to deal with. And
I think the difference is there's accountability at Paris Saint-Germain. At Paris Saint-Germain, you have Nasser and Leonardo who speak daily. Well, yeah, Nasser, yeah, maybe not daily, but Leonardo is there daily, right? So you can judge and you can hear. There's nothing. There's a wall of silence. There's just Ralf Rangnick and his glasses.
Maybe Poch would prefer that.
I don't know. Time will tell. I genuinely like him as a person, so I wish him well. Finally, on Real Madrid, I just tell you this and you can comment. For me, Manchester City are far and away the best team in Europe right now. Doesn't mean they'll win the Champions League because it's knockouts, but for me, I put City as favorites. But after that, I would have to put Liverpool, Bayern, and Real Madrid on a similar level.
I still don't think Real Madrid are the level of Bayern Munich and Liverpool especially.
Right.
I don't.
Time will tell. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Jules, massive news here. We touched upon this earlier. The UK government has frozen Roman Abramovich's assets, including two of his properties. But this is a football show, so it's mostly Chelsea Football Club. This will have an impact. Details are kind of coming out. So what we do know is that these sanctions are going to last until May 31st, but they can be stopped.
Minimum.
They can be stopped at any time, or they can be expanded.
Yeah.
It's going to affect the sale, and we'll get to that in a minute. In the immediate, Chelsea cannot sell any more tickets.
Yeah.
Although if you're a season ticket holder or if you've already bought a ticket, then obviously you're fine. And they're severely restricted in terms of what they can spend on expenses.
Yeah.
But equally, the government wants to make sure that Chelsea can continue to operate until the end of the season. So, you know, some people are going to be saying, oh my God, Chelsea are going to go bankrupt. No, it doesn't appear that way.
No, I don't think it does. But for example, they can only spend £20,000 on travel. So I don't know how you can go to Lille with your whole staff and team.
How much are Eurostar tickets?
Yeah, well, exactly. But when you think about a Premier League travel, I think cost them at least £30,000.
Yeah,
you know. So I'm sure the UK government is going to make it okay for them to go to Champions League away games, certainly. But they won't be fans there. away fans. Chelsea fans are not going to travel away now. The potential extension of contracts of Rudiger or Christensen cannot happen right now with this new license. And yes, they can still pay their players and their staff, which is good. They can pay the transfer fees that they overdue. That is still okay. So there's still a few things that they can do. However, it's still very, very, very limited. It's limiting you in some of the things you can do.
I'm going to be a bit cynical here. The government, they came down very hard on Abramovich. They accused him of destabilizing Ukraine. They accused him of having close links to Vladimir Putin, none of which necessarily knew. The fact that it took this long, my sense is the government spent a lot of time looking at how can we come up with a package of sanctions that look like we're cracking down, that will have an effect on the war, but at the same time aren't going to damage Chelsea as a football club, because this is still an English business with English employees that pays taxes to the English government. So they're threading a fine line. And at the same time, let's make sure that we don't get a court injunction against this so that we can legally do this. So I'm assuming this is all pretty well thought out and presumably bulletproof. You know my thoughts on lawyers.
Yeah.
It could all change. One big impact, though, is that how does it affect the change? Because you had several newspapers reporting the government saying Abramovich won't get a penny out of Chelsea from the sale.
Surely they would issue a new license just for the sale, in the sense that if that is in the interest of Chelsea and doesn't benefit at all Roman Abramovich, so for example, he sells the club for 3 billion, let's say, and all that money goes to the government, for example, even if they freeze that as well, so they just keep it there, but that it doesn't go straight into Abramovich's pocket, you could
wait,
easily
see... It's not
going
to go to his foundation?
Or his foundation or whatever, but you could easily see the UK government say, okay, just for the sale, here you go, here's a new license, you can just do the sale, all the rest stays in place, and once the sale is acted with a new ownership, then I guess you lift the sanctions.
I think there's a lot of stuff that needs to be clarified, and I don't want to go overboard one way or another until this stuff gets answered. So, for example, the fact that Chelsea owe Roman Abramovich $1.5 billion, does that mean that but freezing an asset doesn't mean confiscating an asset. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you can't just take it away from him. You can say you can't benefit from it, but Chelsea were already making a loss, right? Yeah. I have regularly made losses most of these years. Mm. He hasn't taken money out of the club. So again, I'm not a lawyer. I still have a million questions about how this would have worked, but I think it's fair to say from what we see, it's not necessarily going to materially affect what we see from Chelsea on the pitch in terms of being able to field a team. It's going to certainly affect...
Well, no away fans. That could be a problem.
It could be weirdly something to their advantage.
No, but do you see what I mean?
Chelsea fans away.
Yeah, no Chelsea
either.
Fans.
Actually, that's one that needs to be clarified.
Yeah,
because
no
obviously,
Chelsea away fans.
Well, you buy the tickets from the other club, though. If I'm a Chelsea fan, I go and I buy a ticket from Arsenal to go watch Chelsea, but I have to do it through Chelsea.
Yeah, so that's why you can't do it.
I think that's another thing which needs to be clarified. I don't think that's clear.
But when you think that already, when we had Thomas Tuchel saying that it was waiting a bit on his mind, you know,
there's no question.
This is another thing for the players to have somewhere in the back of their mind, even if it doesn't really change their daily routine. It's still something else.
There's no question this uncertainty is not going to help. It's not going to help also in terms of planning for the summer.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to have an impact in that sense. In terms of material impact, I'm sure we'll update you in future shows. All right, enough, Roman. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
After 12 wins in a row in all competitions, Liverpool lose at home to Inter 1-0. Jules, they still go through the quarterfinals on the strength of their 2-0 win at the San Siro, and they did hit the woodwork three times, but any concerns for Jurgen Klopp?
A little bit, Gab, being there. They couldn't really deal with the press, and Inter played really well with the ball, without the ball. Maybe because in midfield, Curtis Jones and Thiago Alcantara, who are coming back from injury, you know, were not fully match fit, maybe, but they lacked a bit of intensity there, certainly in the first half. So I don't know if we can call it a concern, but certainly it's been a long time since I've seen a team coming to Anfield and just and just bossed the game for an hour, like Inter did, to be fair. And I think they deserve a lot of credit. And for Klopp, I think you're happy that you're through. And, you know, you see how you can maybe make sure that the intensity that you usually have in midfield is still there in those big games. And because I don't think they can get away with these kind of games too often.
I wonder if this is a blueprint for other teams coming to Anfield.
Yeah, but I don't know how many teams can play like Inter, though, even without Barella. And Inter, you know, keep speaking about them. We're in the game, Gab, until Alexis got sent off. Do they exit with regret? Did you think it was a second yellow or Fabinho made the most of it?
I think in the modern game that's a sending off. I don't think there's much of an issue there. Alexis Sanchez was thoroughly committed, which is what you want to see. It was a big deal, big call from Simone Inzaghi to give him the start.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking about it. He says, like, I'm not just an impact sub. He gave everything. He made a really poor decision and he put himself in that situation. Also with, frankly, the first yellow. That said, they leave with regret. I mean, Rio Ferdinand said that over the two legs, Inter played better football. And
they won three halves out of four.
Yeah, but then they lack cutting edge at the front. And that is ultimately why Liverpool deservedly go through, because scoring goals is a fundamental part of this game. But I think the leap in confidence that they get, they're saying, yeah, we can play this way. You know, we can't just kind of hit you in certain situations and defend deep and do this and that. We can go out and match you for intensity, match you for pressing. That is a big leap forward. Yeah. And I think it's something for Simone Inzaghi to build on for next season, because you may not need to do this to win Serie A, but if you want to go anywhere in Europe, you have to be able to play like this against big clubs. Don't poke the bear, Jules. We were critical of Bayern, and especially after their away draw in the first leg, some of the recent results, but they stormed back with a 7-1 thumping of Salzburg. Robert Lewandowski scores the fastest hat-trick in Champions League history. My theory is it's only because Manuel Neuer is back.
Yeah, maybe it is. 23 minutes it took for Lewandowski to score his hat-trick, which is 1 minute quicker than Marco Simone.
Former Monaco star.
Yeah, for AC Milan a long time ago. Well done to Lewandowski. I mean, no one really never thought that Salzburg would go and qualify, right?
I did. I thought it was possible if Bayern didn't show up, if Sven Ulreich was still there. And
yeah, but no.
No.
Yeah,
okay.
Manchester City also advanced after drawing 0-0 with Sporting. Gab, this was never really in doubt given they won 5-0 the first leg.
Yeah. It wasn't in doubt, but still, you know, he didn't make wholesale changes. You know, he made teeny tiny. We saw this guy, Riley, right back. And Bette came on. But again, they played with intensity. I thought it was interesting. Ruben Amorim came out and said, let's just show that we can play for 90 minutes without conceding. And they focused on defending. Yeah. They picked their spots. The Sporting fans did the Poznan under no illusions.
It was a good day for them. It's a good experience.
On the one hand, it's good. On the other hand, part of me also says, dude, you're playing football in the Champions League. Go out and try to win.
Yeah.
You know, it depresses me that you kind of go in there accepting
you're
defeated.
I get your point.
Cristiano Ronaldo is back and took to social media to tell us he was working hard. But Jules, the Telegraph are reporting that his trip to Portugal was not authorized by the club.
Yeah. That's not surprising, though. You're not surprised by that, right?
I'm surprised that I know nothing about this club, that they don't have a media person to go out there and correct things that are wrong.
I just think he was supposed to be on the bench.
Then we got to find out information through leaks. Why not have somebody saying...
That's what they do.
It is ridiculous to me. I know they had a communications guy who left. They have a communications woman who lives at Carrington and never speaks to anyone. Certainly doesn't speak to me or return my phone calls. I don't know. So when you don't fill the gap and tell people what's going on, when Ralf Rangnick is the only person speaking, other people will go and they'll create stories and so on.
We will ask Rangnick, though, and Rangnick would tell us if he was sanctioned by the club or not. If he wasn't, it's really disappointing from Cristiano's part. It is. UEFA have announced that Poland, who were due to face Russia in the World Cup playoff semi-final, I guess we can call it either, will advance to the final with a bye, Gab, which means that they will play the winner of the Sweden-Czech Republic other semi-final on March 29th. And the Ukraine's game against Scotland, who was also supposed to be one of the semi-finals, has been moved to June. And the winner will face the winner of Wales against Austria. Is that the right decisions? And are Sweden and Czech Republic right to not be happy by the fact that Poland get a bye instead of facing someone else, for example, and something?
I don't think it's a big deal. Why? So Poland play Norway or Slovakia and you play that. Just worry about beating what's in front of you. You know what? I mean, the people who may have a slight issue are Wales and Austria, because, you know, it's interesting that they're playing now and then they're going to have to wait another 3 months, then wait for Ukraine to play Scotland, and then be. I wonder. I mean, I'm sure. I assume they asked them, and they asked Wales and Austria, "Do you have other commitments? Would you rather play your game in June at the end of the season, so that you know we keep the same format?" Look, it's not a good situation. There's a war. No, okay. Yeah. Thomas Tuchel came out and he said he'd love for Andreas Christensen to stay at Chelsea. We know with the sanctions, that's unlikely. His free agent move to Barcelona seems all but done, Jules. Catalan media even reporting that he's had his medical. Is this the right choice for him? Tuchel doesn't think so. Do you?
I think it's hard to say no to a Barca, a Real Madrid, even if you are Chelsea. Because I think, especially when you've been at a club for so long like Christensen has, and he has highs and lows, the times where he was not playing, he went on loan, he came back. Is he a definite starter?
He's in the mix. He's competing with Eric Garcia and Araujo, and Piqué's going to go. I mean, he's going to retire at some point, I presume.
I think him and Araujo would be a very strong partnership and complement each other quite well. Right now, with Xavi, Barca on the up, but he had a good thing going on at Chelsea as well. So
I think he's a ball playing centre back.
Yeah, that's what Xavi
was. At Chelsea, though, I don't think he was ever dominant to that level. And I think maybe in a different system, he can do even better.
Yeah, maybe. Premier League football will return to Chinese TV screens this evening, according to reports. But this is after the Premier League agreed, Gab, to leave out the pro-Ukraine messages. What?
If this is true, I mean, from going by reports, this is appalling, right? So essentially, they didn't show the games at the weekend because they didn't want to show political messages. So then they decide, okay, then no political messages so that we can be on television in China. I'm sorry.
Really?
How about you stand for sanctions or something? If China come back and said, okay, but no kneeling, right, before kickoff, what would your response have been? This is silly. This is the product we sell. You know, we're talking about a couple games here. You're not going to lose bazillions. This is really disappointing to me. Spurs thumped Everton 5-0 back on Monday. Jules, two easy questions. How can Tottenham be so erratic, and how can Everton be so bad?
Everton's so bad because they have confidence. I'm not even sure Frank Lampard knows what he's doing right now. And for Spurs, I expect them, I want them to have a bit of consistency now. Hopefully that will come. FIFA allowing foreign players and coaches under contract with Russian club to be able to leave, Gab, and sign as free agent for other clubs until June 30 to basically finish the season with another club. Does that make sense to you?
I think it makes sense. Obviously, these other clubs, you know, that the Russian league is still going on, but, you know, you've essentially freed them. It's also to make it easier for them to get out. If you think vis-a-vis the World Cup or whatever, these guys are going to want to play. It's only until the end of the season. The question is then, though, if they have lucrative contracts in Russia, will the clubs want to take them back?
Yeah.
If you leave and go away. So I don't think many people are going to take up this option, except for people who've done it for political reasons, who disagree with what's going on there and wanted to make a statement. But I do think it is the right choice for FIFA to make. Huge win for Olympique Lyonnais away to Porto in the Europa League. Jules, do we need to revise our views on Peter Bosz?
We've always said that there were some good things, Gab, and that was really good. I mean, Porto were poor. Porto were really poor, but Lyon were good. They were in control. They like those Europa League games. They're usually pretty good, better than in Ligue 1.
So how about the packet with a big headdress
packet
on?
Early on as well, and then get a gash to his head, and then goes and scores the winner. They could even probably have won 2-0 easily. Let's hope that they can see this out in the second leg and qualify. That would be huge for them and for Peter Bosz, because that the pressure is easing a bit now. They're doing a little bit better.
Let's hope. You're not going to hope that if you're a Porto fan.
No, but you know. Sticking with the Europa League, Eintracht Frankfurt beat Betis 2-1 away in Spain. Gab, things going from bad to worse for our friend Pellegrini. Oh, they tired or
they? They have a million injuries. Yeah. They're clearly fatigued. I don't know that they have the squad big enough. They had issues at both full-back positions. I mean, there's only so much you can get out of it. But let's also give credit to Frankfurt. You know, Betis making some big mistakes at the back. You can go check out the highlights on YouTube. Yeah. And they were there to capitalize. Sticking in Seville, there was fighting, Jules, between Eintracht fans and West Ham supporters. Video of that, again, all over the web. Now, West Ham were there because they play Sevilla on Thursday, which is why this game, Betis at home, was played on Wednesday. I thought we'd move beyond this nonsense, fighting in the streets. I don't want to need to see this again.
No. I mean, West Ham haven't been in Europe for so long. They're in Europe. They're doing well. And yet, I suspect their fans... You know, I don't know if they arranged those hooligans fight or what, but like behave like this. And by the way, this rule about two clubs from the same city cannot play the same day, I get it. But what about you play Betis one day and Sevilla the next day when you know that it's Frankfurt and West Ham and there's potential this could happen? Why didn't you move the away leg or the home leg so at least Frankfurt fans and West Ham fans were not in town the same night?
Yeah, you would think...
Surely.
You would think that, especially since, you know, you don't have the whole away goals rule anymore.
Exactly.
This would be a good time to do that. I think it's something... But I would also hope, what I'm not clear on, is how early do West Ham fans get to Seville? I mean, you know, normally... you would think that you travel the day of the game and
you spend
the afternoon drinking in the square and then you go to the game and then you leave the next morning, right?
True.
I mean...
True. That's why I wondered yesterday when I saw if it was maybe arranged, which is even worse because it should have never
been... You think the inner-city firm are coming out of retirement?
I don't know, but it looked pretty like that, to be fair. Contract talks between Paulo Dybala and Juventus were postponed, Gab, as we know, and you obviously have strong views on it.
I'm not very popular with certain Juve fans, and I've often been critical of the club. But on this one, I tip my hat to you, Maurizio Arrivabene. I'm not going to go so far as Nedved, but this is the right attitude. Look, you set up a meeting with his agent. You say, all right, we're going to talk on Thursday, okay? Next thing you do, it's all over the press because one of the two sides says, oh, yeah, she's coming to renew on Thursday, right? And then, because they think they're being clever, then on Monday or over the weekend, it's all like, oh, Inter Milan really want Dybala. Dybala, we just want... I'm sorry. Shut your gob. Shut up. Be serious about this. And if you're Juve, you know, look, Juve are spinning this. Look, now we have Vlahovic. There's a new reality here, blah, blah, blah. Good. Good. Decide how much he's worth to you. Because I tell you, nobody, except for a stupid, badly run club, is going to give Dybala 10 million euros a year.
I agree.
Nobody. The man is injured all the time. The man's had his moments. He's at the club badge. And now it's being spun like, well, Dybala wants assurances about his role between the team and the captaincy. No, you don't get assurances, right? Yeah. If you can't play, you can't play, right? So stay fit, produce for a while, and then we have this conversation. If you love the club so much, you're already one of the highest earners at the club, then they'll keep you around. Honestly, well done, Juve. The ways of the past have to finish.
Yeah.
Speaking of Dybala, you better stick and carrot here.
Yeah,
he and Viviane Miedema are spearheading an effort by the charity Common Goal to raise funds for victims of the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, which is great. I mean... I love Vivian more and more and more and more, not just for what she does on the pitch, because she's amazing.
Paolo? Why just Vivian?
Paolo wants a bigger contract.
Okay.
But Viv is just amazing. She's fantastic on and off the pitch. I've got so much respect for her and for him and for all the players involved with Common Goal and everyone in the world of football that is doing their bit to support.
For those who don't know, Common Goal is a charity. I think Juan Mata was one of the first people who was involved with it, where basically they pledged to give 1% of their wages to different charities. And in this case, they want to have it for the victims of the war.
It's fantastic. Gab, I'm not sure how many people have heard of Lee Congerton. Certainly I didn't until now. But he's the new head of recruitment at Atalanta. And it's really rare to have British coaches to get or executives to go abroad and do those kind of jobs, you know, not in the UK.
Yeah, so people often wonder, you know, how do you get into these positions of power, director of football type thing? So Congerton is a guy who... He was at Chelsea at youth level, involved in youth recruitment. Then Frank Arnesen took him with him to when he went to Hamburg, I think it was, or wherever it was in Germany. Then from there, he's moved on. He's held that role. He also worked at Liverpool. He's worked at Celtic. He was tight with Brendan Rodgers. I think he was at Sunderland. I think I already said that. He was most recently at Leicester. again, with Brendan.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's good when people are going abroad. I'm not saying this. Atalanta obviously done a great job with their recruitment already.
Yeah. But I love the fact that they're open-minded enough to go and get a British guy instead of just an Italian guy that has been doing the round before. Do you see what I mean?
Exactly. I think, look, the more we have movement, the more you expand your mind and the more you see. Yeah. And, you know, this guy, I know for a fact, he doesn't speak. I've never spoken to him because he's one of those people like, I like my work, you know, do the talking for me. Yeah. That's great. But Lee, nobody knows who the hell you are. you know, he's the opposite of Leonardo, basically. Yeah. Leonardo speaks continuously,
exactly,
and we all know all about him. So, good luck to him.
Yeah.
Michael Olise has been one of the best young players in the Premier League this season, a big part of Crystal Palace's success. For me, he's really, really underrated.
Yeah.
He's even a lot better than a lot of the praise he's getting.
Yeah.
Jules, his mom is French-Algerian. His dad is Nigerian. He was born here in England.
Yes.
Gareth Southgate reportedly wants him. He's played for France.
But his name is Michael Olise, not Michael, to start with, because he's French. So you can all, you know, leave him alone. He will play for us. He plays
already. Why can't he be Nigerian?
No, but he is. I'm sure he's got a passport, but he's going to play for France. He knows if he wants to win the World Cup.
But do you want to win it as a passenger, or do you want to reach the final?
He's only 19, he's only 20, so he's got plenty of time. But Deschamps watches him. We know he plays already for the youth teams in France. So
okay, I'm gonna. What I find interesting about him, right, is, and obviously we have this all the time about, you know, players, and I'm never going to be somebody who, you know, tells people how they should feel, what allegiance. But I feel like most cases, people who are born in a country and are raised in that country, they either play for that country or they often play for their dad's country because they grow up hearing stories. Or I don't know if you grew up with stories of Rashidi Yekini and Daniel Amokachi, JJ Okocha. I don't know.
Why not for his mom's country?
I mean, I'm sorry, we live in a patriarchy still.
What?
And it's rare for somebody.
Rubbish. That is rubbish.
No, but I generally don't know. I don't know the background that makes him grow up here. But I think he was at Chelsea when he was younger. And he would say, "Mom, I love France, I'm French." And the mom that would make him feel French.
But
going
on holidays in France
I think it's a great story.
Yeah, it is. You know what? When I see him, I'll ask him.
No, ask him because I think it's a wonderful story. But I think it also speaks to how multicultural London is.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And well done to him.
Yeah. Southampton v Newcastle kicks off in a few hours because we record this on Thursday morning. This game was postponed from December, and Ralph Hasenhüttl thinks it's unfair that Newcastle gets to play the signings that they made in January, of course, because they wouldn't have been able to play when the game was originally scheduled. He's got a point, right?
No, he doesn't. Hey, I mean, I love Ralph Hasenhüttl. If he wants to be the next United manager, I think he would do a great job. In fact, I might even put Hasenhüttl ahead of Poch and Ten Hag. But this is just silly. Ralph, the game was postponed because of COVID.
Yeah.
Right? And there's people maybe who were injured back then and who are fit now.
True.
So they went and they spent money in January. I just deal with it. Unfair. I mean, I don't think he made a big stink out of it. And look, just focus on continuing with the great job you've been doing thus far this season. You're not going to get relegated.
No.
Looks like Newcastle won't get relegated either. Just focus on that. Don't worry about it. Wesley Fofana has been injured for a very long time, but he's putting pen to paper at Leicester City. And Jules, you're a big fan.
I am a big fan. Well done until 2027. I think well done for Leicester, on the Leicester point of view, to protect the asset. And he's a very, very talented player who at some point already attracts bigger clubs. So at least you know that he's not going to leave on a free or for a very low transfer fee because he will only have 1 year left on his contract.
Like Yuri Tielemans.
Exactly. And for him, I think this is good. This is stability. He's just been injured for 7 months. He's coming back now and hopefully have a very strong end of the season and then goes again next season. But this is the right environment for him. He's going to stay a few more years and then he will go to much bigger things because he's that good. Jesse Marsch has hit back at those who keep asking him about his post-match huddle following his debut as a lead manager last weekend against Leicester. He calls the reaction hilarious and ridiculous.
Okay, I'm going to.
What's wrong with the huddle?
I'm going to declare my biases here. Okay, so first of all, as somebody who liked Jesse Marsch,
yeah, me too.
When you started speaking on the radio and on television, was undermined because I have an American accent, as does Jesse Marsch.
Yeah.
So that is one level of bias. So I am predisposed to feel a little bit of warmth and simpatico for him. Equally, I am predisposed to mock him and make fun of him because he is a former Princeton guy, and I went to a rival school. That said, he is 100% correct. My two biases balance out. 100%. This is so stupid. We went through this with Bob Bradley a little bit before. Yeah. I don't think it was ever as overblown as the U.S. media when they caught wind of it. I think all we've had is Gabriel Bonlahor talking on the radio, criticizing him. And frankly, even though he has got a wonderful first name, I'm sorry, Bonlahor, you're wrong. What is the big deal? It's a huddle. Celtic Football Club, who I believe are in this country. We still have United Kingdom, they're just up the road in Scotland. They do a huddle, right?
Yeah.
Just because Phil Brown did it many years ago, and because people hear...
And that was a halftime. It was not even the sim.
Look, he came out and he said, you know why I did it? I did it because I did it all the time, because immediately after the game, when I was in Germany, my guys had media commitments and I wanted to speak to them immediately at the final whistle.
Yeah.
So I just simply asked them to gather around I had a few thoughts to say.
Exactly.
Just
completely
honestly,
fair.
Lay off him.
I know.
Lay off him, man. Lyon's Moussa Dembélé had reportedly been identified as a potential replacement for Edinson Cavani at Manchester United. Jules are talking $25 million. I'd love to know who is identifying him, since they don't have a manager in place. But right. I'm assuming it's the clever people upstairs. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fletcher, Murta, maybe Ragnick even himself. I don't know when they've seen him play, because this season he's been really hit and miss at times. He hasn't scored, for example, in Europe.
He made such an impact at Atletico Madrid last season, but...
Yeah, no, for example. But he had COVID and he had an injury.
So they didn't really see him there too. But remember Lyon's run? Didn't he score? Didn't he and Tolo come when they had that run in the Champions League? Didn't he score in the quarterfinals or play well, maybe?
I think...
Maybe Manchester United scouts just have so much scouting to do. They're only just catching up now with Y Scout. And so they've gotten as far as...
Celtic. Yeah, that's two incredible seasons. Yeah, Celtic. I think he's really good and he's Paris born and bred. So I love Moussa completely. I think... In the right environment, with the right team, he would score a ton of goals.
Born in Paris, but made in Fulham. All right. You're not going for that.
Former Bayern and Ukraine legend Anatoly Timochuk has been harshly criticized and could lose his coaching badges issued by the Ukrainian FA. Timochuk, who's an assistant at Zenit, has refused to condemn the Russian invasion. That's strange.
Look, I think... I disagree with this. Whatever Timoshuk is Ukrainian, he works in Russia. There are people within Ukraine who, for whatever reason, I'm on the outside. I can't tell them what to think.
Yeah.
If this guy, for his own career, for his own family, doesn't feel like he wants to condemn the invasion, I don't think it's fair to just cancel him. I don't think he's actively working against Ukraine, unless you feel that he's doing that, in which case, you can call him treasonous or whatever.
Yeah.
But to me, it seems a little bit petty that you would take away his coaching badges. Also, it's also pretty irrelevant too, because I'm sure the Russian FA will give him coaching badges the next day if you take Ukrainian ones away.
But can you see why they're trying to hit him with some sort of sanction? Because
I think you condemn him and you say, look, you're not welcome back here because, our country's being invaded. But whatever the reason is, if he's just doing it to hang on to, whatever massive salary he gets as an assistant coach at Zenit, fine. Again, I don't know his family background, why he would feel like this.
Yeah.
I just get uneasy when it becomes an issue about people's opinions rather than their actions. Shocking story from Holland, Jules. Quincy Promise could be charged with attempted murder.
Yeah, that's right, Gab. It was a story that happened 2 years ago when he was back in Holland. You know, he played for Spartak Moscow, and he basically stabbed his cousin in a like family reunion. Apparently, there was a disagreement and a fight started or something like that. He denies every wrongdoing, but clearly the investigation, he'd been arrested before, remember?
And then it looked like he was just going to be charged with assault. Now there's apparently audio, the prosecution says there's audio of him threatening to actually do it, which obviously puts it in a different light.
I know, crazy. The Daily Mail are reporting that the FA is considering hiring a cruise ship for players' wives and girlfriends during the World Cup in Qatar, Gab, because we know accommodation is very restricted. What could go wrong?
Yeah, look, whatever goes wrong, it's not going to be like the 2006 World Cup when they had all the wives and girlfriends and families in a hotel in Baden-Baden. Right, yes, I was there. And one of the benefits, of course, is that they're free to drink alcohol on the boat. I don't think this is as big a deal. I should say this group of wags, to use a term that they commonly use here, they don't get the media attention that the past group did.
True.
I think part of it is they don't seek out that level of media attention. They seem to be, as a group, better behaved. I think the media have grown up a little bit about this as well. So hopefully this won't be a story and we'll just focus on the football.
That'd be good.
All right, Jules, that brings us to an end. Again, commiserations. I understand now why you're wearing dark for today's show. But we got to come back on Monday.
Of course.
The sun will rise again, Jules.
Yes, PSG will be beaten by Bordeaux.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.